Grab your bat microphone, it's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate, it's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to the Bat Pod. My name is Bill Beer. And joining me tonight is a special guest. He's been on the Bat Pod before, Bob Rowland.
Oh, my God, Bill. It is so good to be back here, and it still smells like you.
I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but I'll take it.
Well, we'll leave it at that. But yes, it is good to be broadcasting again. Probably no one out there remembers, but you started a podcast way back when, Galaxy in a Comic Shop. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. Not so much the podcast, because that was awful, but it was talking to other people in the comic book podcast community. I mean, Professor Frenzy, Chris, Reggie, everybody, you. It's, so yeah, so it's good to be back in the saddle.
Very good, very good. So when we were discussing about you coming on the podcast here, I said, pick an old Batman book, a back issue. It has to have Batman because this is a Batman podcast. So tell everybody what Batman book you picked.
Now, first of all, Bill, I want to be clear here. You were talking about Batman villains and why certain villains are great. That's how the discussion started. So don't blame me if the one we're doing is The Question, number 26. I completely forgot. And I want to give everyone a little bit of a trigger warning. If you're looking at this live, you're seeing this comic book. It's a beloved old comic book that's out of print. Oh, look, the cover comes right off. Goodness. This thing is, I actually have a good copy bag and boarded, but this one has actually been with me since it came out. And I bought it at a convenience store in Buffalo, the 2-4. So, yeah. Shout out to the 2-4. They would sell booze to anyone.
Well, that's good. That's good. You can't beat that. You picked the question number 26.
Now, question 26. Now, as you mentioned, Batman villains. Now, one of the greatest and probably most underutilized villains has to be the Riddler, right? I mean, there's a reason the Riddler has stuck around despite his only ability being causing himself more trouble than he's worth. There's something appealing about the character. And it's not because writers love him, because writers have to come up with all these riddles. No, there's something really good about the character. And very rarely is he portrayed well, except every now and then. And this is an example, the question 26, of where he is portrayed in such an interesting and different way. Now, it helped. If you don't know the question, written by Denny O'Neill, who, if you're talking Batman, you got to be talking Denny O'Neill, is one of the greatest Batman writers ever.
Of course.
So no mystery that he would have, especially at a time when he was editor of the Batman titles. The kind of clout to pull the Riddler and Commissioner Gordon into an issue of The Question, the most underappreciated comic book series ever created.
Oh, I agree. It's been a while since I've read it. I don't even remember how many issues I read, but back in the day, it was incredible. And Denny O'Neill, what has he written that you don't like, seriously, as far as, especially as Batman goes?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's had fill-in issues, and I'm sure, like anyone else, he could point to one where, well, you know what, there's one where Batman is very tired, but he's walking around in the daytime in downtown Gotham, and everyone's just sort of looking at Batman as he's yawning and walking. That's a Denny O'Neill joint.
Now, when you picked this book, I was a little surprised, because I thought it was going to be The Eraser.
No, God, if only the Eraser had ever appeared in more things, I might have I might have spent more time getting the Eraser tattoo on my back like I always wanted to. But sadly, the Eraser just doesn't show up as much as is warranted. He practically knows who Bruce Wayne is, right? Like, forget about the Joker knowing Bruce Wayne. It's the Eraser, an old college chum. He's probably seen Bruce naked in the shower. Come on, that has to be a psychological edge, right?
You would think, or it could be a psychological thing that you don't want to go into.
Now, this is a black label version of the Batpod, right? I could go into Batman's dong. That's not a problem.
Well, we'll have to. Do we have a mute button.
Okay, because I had Warren Ellis next door. I thought maybe he'd want to pop in. And yeah. Anyways, so the question. So here's the thing. Normally, I hate the deconstruction of villains. I hate the let's look at how they work and how they operate, because normally it's done very badly. And a lot of times there's also the great sin of breaking down a character so much you can't build him back up. And let me tell you, this breaks the Riddler down so much that he is completely at ground zero as a character by the end of it. So I assume that a lot of people probably haven't read it. Now, do you know if the question is online at all? Can you actually get it from DC Universe?
You can get it from DC Universe, and it's available from Comixology. And it's only like $1.99 an issue.
Guys, you have to go out and get this series. And a lot of it is more relevant today than it was back when it was written. You're dealing with the urban decay of Hub City. You have a question of, you know, what does it mean to try and advocate for justice at a point when the system itself is broken? This is the Wire of comic books, the question. You have some great ish takes on race, takes on, you know, the issues that Myra has as mayor of Hub City. And it's a really great series. But so the question 26, it actually breaks down the Riddler so much where he almost becomes kind of a laughing joke. And that's where it starts. It's the Riddler in prison. And he's talking about, you know, I was fighting with Batman and neck and neck, and the prisoners are kind of listening to him, but kind of not. And then a policeman comes and grabs him and tells him that Commissioner Gordon wants to see him. And the Riddler says, I assume Batman sent you. It's not. Batman doesn't care. It's a Riddler thing. And the only riddle that was left behind, even Gordon was able to figure it out. And I love it when Gordon tells the Riddler, your name isn't really even Edward Nygma. Go back to teaching.
Yes, yes.
That's a character at his low point, right? Like everything you are, your motif, the question, the Riddler, you are broken at this point as a character, and you can only go up from there. And I think Denny O'Neill really does have an affection for this character, despite how this book kind of turns out for the Riddler.
No. Because that scene, you know, he's saying, oh, did he solve my riddle? Did the Batman send you? And he's like, no, that riddle was too easy. Even I got that riddle. So do something else. Find a new career, go back to teaching or whatever, but crime isn't for you.
And then you get to, now, another thing I should mention is that this is one of the few issues of the question where Dennis Cowan is not doing the artwork. The artist is, at the time, there was a lot of, there was an internet, it would have melted down over this issue, because I remember in the convenience store where I hung out with, you know, I'd meet some other guys, we're buying some beer and getting some comics, and, you know, we're talking, but this is terrible art. And I thought so for the longest time, but the longer I've owned this book, the more and more I appreciate kind of the grotesqueness of the artwork. Yes. Bill Ray is the artist, and I don't know if he's actually done anything since.
Well, he's done Mad Magazine.
Oh, really?
Yes, he was an artist for Mad Magazine, and he's done Ren and Stimpy.
Ren and Stimpy would be a good matchup for him, because, as I mentioned, there's a grotesqueness in the way some of the characters are portrayed. One of the characters, so we are introduced after you know, the Riddler gets taken down. We're introduced to the character of the question. And if it's your first issue of the question, you get the tone of the series by this man with no face and an angry, psychotic, drugged up Santa Claus is charging at him.
He's in a department store.
In a department store.
Throws the tree.
Right. Where the cops are asleep in the patrol car outside. And that is a great introduction for who this character is. This is a man who has been, at this point in the series, beaten by life. Hub City, the city he loves, the city he is reborn in a sense. It's a city that is completely in total chaos, with the mayor being in a coma, with the National Guard refusing to come in. It's a city complete. It's no man's land. Years before Denny O'Neill did No Man's Land of Gotham.
And he's currently injured, and he's trying to make up for the entire police force because, well, you saw a couple of them there that didn't seem to care. Or
which, in fairness, in Hub City, I mean, you know, crazy Santa Claus. And on your list of priorities, that's probably pretty low.
Yeah.
So now you have the question broken down to his lowest psychological point. You know, you have your antagonist is broken down. Now the protagonist is also beaten down, because he's not only beat up physically, but also mentally. At this point, the question is very spiritual, following the dictates of Zen, all these healing techniques he's learned. He can't even meditate properly. And finally, he passes out. He refuses to admit he passes out. Mm-hmm. As he mentions, passing out is what Victorian ladies do. But instead, he completely passes out, and his best friend, Tot, who was a great character in comics, decides, I'm going to take you for a drive into the woods and get you away from Hub City. Unfortunately, Tot does not realize that he's run out of gas, and the car breaks down, and the only way out of the snowstorm is a bus. And who's on the bus? The Riddler.
The Riddler, yes. Now, the one question I have right away is, okay, did he say he had a Ferrari engine?
A Ferrari engine in his VW bug. Now, yeah. Let me say it. Now, I expect by Denny O'Neill, if you're listening in heaven, be sure to send me down the no prize from heaven. And yes, I know it's a different company. Send me the no prize anyways. Here's my theory. Now, as we know, the VW bug has basically the exact same engine as the Porsche 911 in sense of size and power per weight ratio. Basically, the Porsche is nothing more than a glorified VW bug in terms of parts, in terms of equipment, in terms of how it operates. So therefore, what was meant to be said was not Ferrari engine, but a Porsche engine.
There you go.
All right.
I did not know that.
The parts would fit. I did not
research that.
The parts fit, the wrenches, the nuts and bolts would fit, transmission would fit, everything would fit if you put a Porsche engine into a VW bug. Probably, maybe have to use a hammer. Look, I'm not a VW bug guy. I write about comic books and records, and I'm drunk most of the time when I do that. So there you go. Don't quote me on putting a Porsche engine in a VW bug, but you can if you want to. So you have, once again, the protagonist antagonist completely broken down, and you have a bus. So this puts it almost like a stage play, where you have the different characters happening in different portions of the room. Telling the story, right? This is what would be called on TV a bottle episode, because most of it takes place as a hostage situation on the bus. The Riddler has met this former stripper named Sphinx, and the two of them hit it off because she is also a former convict, and she recognizes that the Riddler, Eddie, is also a former convict, and she decides she's going to rob a bus. But the Riddler says, if we're going to rob a bus, we got to ask riddles. And so this blend between a psychotic, kill-crazy woman with an Uzi and the Riddler is born, where the Riddler will ask a riddle, and if you get the answer right, you get to go free and run across this frozen bridge, and if you get it wrong, you're going to be shot in the back. And what tense hostage situation on a bus. I mean, this is cinematic, right? Like, you see Tarantino doing this exact same setup. The frozen bridge, the empty landscape. It's brilliant writing by Denny O'Neill, which is no surprise because it's Denny O'Neill.
Yeah,
did I mention I like this comic?
I believe so.
Because if you haven't gotten that clue, if I'm being too subtle about it, it's a great comic. And finally, the question, who's beaten up? He can't possibly force his way in the situation. He walks up the aisle and he starts asking the Riddler questions. And, questions like from the original Sphinx, or questions about philosophy, questions about who we are, what we are, those kind of questions. And finally, he ends up with, what was your face before it was born? As he lifts up his hat, and it's clear that he has no face on with a question mask on. And that's enough to stun the Riddler while the question punches him. But it's defeating the Riddler by asking him questions, and questions that the Riddler later admits that he's always avoided, philosophical questions, because those riddles are way too hard. He'd rather do a riddle that is about, getting a bank wet. He'd rather not deal with the big questions of philosophy and what does it mean if all we know is through our senses, how do we know that abstractions exist, like good and evil and all these big questions? And the Riddler, even though he's smart and brilliant, has always been afraid of the questions, and that's why he loses in this book. That's why he loses in life, is because he's afraid of questions.
Yeah.
And you have that metaphor come to life of the question. He's afraid of the question, and the questions scare him, and that's pretty much how the comic book resolves itself. That is called good writing, folks.
Yes, I liked at the end there, I should ask you to riddle, and if you answer correctly, I'll let you go for free.
And then it just ends up with the Riddler's face and a question mark.
Yeah.
What does happen at the end?
Yeah.
That's everything you want out of a comic book. And that's one issue. If you didn't know who these characters were, you could open up this book, read it, and it's giving you all the backstory you need. It sets up each character. Each character has a distinct arc to them. It's a story that has a beginning and a middle and an end. And after trying to, you know, 6 months during COVID, I wasn't reading comics. I'm starting to read them again. I'm deadly confused. I miss when I could just pick up a book and get a complete story. That is amazing.
Yeah. So, no, they set up these characters excellent. The Riddler especially. And you talked about deconstruction, that sort of thing with villains sometimes. Well, I felt like the Riddler was like, okay, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I'll just get on this bus and go and see what else is out there. And then he meets this lady and she's like, yeah, let's do something that, you know, we'll just kill a bunch of people in this bus. And he's like, yeah, it has to be a riddle. She's like, I thought the riddles weren't working out. Says, it's not the riddles. The riddles were perfect. It's the way I use the riddles.
I always thought if I was ever given a chance to write a Batman comic, I would write a story about two of the Riddler's henchmen who do nothing but fail to deliver the Riddler's messages. And the Riddler finds himself super successful. He wins every time because his henchmen say, oh, yeah, we're going to deliver this message to Batman. And they just throw it away. And that, you know, because that is the nature of the Riddler, is that he is the smartest man in Gotham, smarter than Bruce in a lot of ways, but he just can't pull it together because he has this obsession. And this posits the notion that his obsession comes not from, you know, finding out that cheating is fun on the school test, but from finding out that questions are scary and that it's easier to focus on things that can be solved, riddles that are accessible to us. Just great.
And getting back to this artwork, when I read this initially, I hated the artwork. The artwork was like, this is awful stuff. But I read it today and it's like, okay, I can appreciate, you know, what he was going for here. And it didn't really look abnormal for like the question and tot until you got to the Riddler and his little floozy there. And that's where she looked like somebody hit her with one of those ugly sticks.
Yeah, but I think one of my favorite scenes, and for those who are listening to the podcast, there is nothing worse than a human being looking through something visually that you can't see while you listen on a podcast. But maybe you're streaming live. There's one scene in here, one panel of her lips that makes it look like a combination of the Rolling Stones logo. Ah, here we go. The Rolling Stones logo and meets Dr. Teeth.
Yeah.
At that point, you realize how much crazier this stripper on the bus is than everyone else involved. Like, people playing costumes seem almost normal compared to the kind of mundane evil that Sphinx represents. And I think that abstract artwork just, I don't know, it kind of felt more like a European comic than it did an American comic. And I didn't like it at the time, but I really do like it now. Like you see this artwork, and if you saw it in Judge Dredd, you wouldn't even think twice about it.
Oh, no, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. But, you know, some of her facial expressions in here are so great. I mean, it shows that she's psychotic. You know, when you got the Al Pacino, you know, scene there where she's shooting the shotgun into the machine gun into the guy's... Actually, she shoots that guy sitting down, but it's Al Pacino.
So. Say hello to my little friend.
Yes.
Yeah. This would be a great, you could set this as a TV episode and it would be a great tense hour situation. I mean, you're stuck in a bus, you're seeing hostages gunned down. What do you do? And that you could feel that kind of claustrophobia with the artwork. I think because it is so messy, I think that if Des Cowan had been doing it, I think it would have had a little bit of a different feel.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it would definitely have a different feel. The Riddler, in that one scene, you know, right after I was talking about, he's like, you killed her. And he has his eyes really wide open and everything. So I think he was kind of shocked that she did that. He thought maybe she was going to do that, but he wasn't so sure. But then afterwards, he was like all full of smiles and everything. But the beginning, there was shock and awe.
Yeah, and I think at that time, the Riddler had not really been... Well, he hadn't really been playing a role since the early 80s when he kind of got a revival because of the Superpowers line of toys there's a little bit more interest in the Riddler. And of course, obviously, Scooby-Doo, the old Batman 66 show, all these things are, you know, absolutely, you know, the Riddler is always going to be with us. But for the most part, he hadn't really been, you know, how do you use him? And sometimes it'd be, you know, well, we need a guy with a random death trap, toss in the Riddler. And so I think kind of reexamining him and once again, completely breaking him down into a joke can make for a better character later. And we did see that. And I think Denny O'Neill actually had a bigger plan for the Riddler. And I only say this because Denny O'Neill had no problem bringing over Question characters into Batman. The character of Harold first appears in The Question, not in Batman. So, and that was a character purely created for The Question. We should never see the character of Harold again after The Question ended. But Denny O'Neill said, you know, this would be a good character to have in the Batcave, and I could tell some good stories involving this character.
It was a good character.
Whatever happened to Harold? Maybe you would know that, Bill. I have big gaps in my comic history sometimes.
Yeah, I off the top of my head, I can't remember, but it would probably come to me like 3 a.m. tonight. So
I know where Harold is! Yeah. I know him!
But no, he was such a great character, and I enjoyed him there in the 90s and in the stories in the Batcave, and I don't know.
So I think if Denny O'Neill had an actual arc with the Riddler, I think he would have tried to do to the Riddler what he did with the Joker, which was bring back to basics what's appealing about the character.
Right.
And I think that might have been derailed when Jim Carrey gets cast as the Riddler, because that probably would have been around the time Denny O'Neill is the editor on Batman books. That's just kind of a crazy conspiracy theory I'm coming up with on the fly. So don't trust me on this one, folks.
Well, if you think about
Go ask Denny.
You think about it. There was no Riddler. You know, when they redid the Joker, they redid Two-Face, brought them back there in the 70s. They didn't do the same with the Riddler. The Riddler was like, you know, maybe they felt they didn't know what to do with him. But, yeah, I can see how, you know, the Jim Carrey Riddler would be like, yeah, maybe we'll just leave him alone. But you didn't see a ton of Riddler in the comics.
No, you really didn't. There'd be long stretches where he wouldn't. And then other times when he would be, it would feel like in the 70s, it did kind of feel like he's in every single comic issue that I bought. Or maybe I bought them because of the Riddler, or maybe because of Super Friends and the Legion of Doom. It seemed like I had a lot more knowledge of the Riddler than I should have. I also had that this great hardcover book called Batman throughout the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Mm-hmm. And it had the first Riddler appearance in it. And in black and white. So like the artwork really stood out to me a little bit more than when I'd later see it colorized. And yeah, it was just it's a good character. And I think I don't like what Scott Snyder did to him. I don't like him as like super mastermind who takes over a city. I don't want him Lex Luthor. But I like this, you know, what if you are the most intelligent man alive and you're being driven by the fact that you can never really find out the answers to the things you really want to find out about. So you create these riddles. I like that character. I think it has a lot of potential.
Oh yes. Yes. And he was used most recently in the Batman book where he had a grid, a green grid up in Gotham City. So all the streets were closed off. They had like these walls. And Batman had to solve his riddles for the streets to be released. And I liked how they used him there, but he hasn't been used most recently where I really enjoyed the Riddler.
Do you know my favorite of the Riddler iterations was probably Paul Dini when he did brief run on Detective Comics, and he made the Riddler this
detective
who's, you know, trying to become a superhero inside Gotham. And I love that notion. I would have loved to see more of that.
Yes. Yeah. That was, and you don't need to keep him like a villain, strictly a villain. The way they used him there, that was probably my favorite version of the Riddler that I can remember. Of course, I love like Golden Age and Silver Age stuff for different reasons. And of course, Batman 66, the Riddler was like the best.
Well, Frank Gorsham, he was a better Joker. Even though he played the Riddler, right? Like that performance as the Riddler is so manic and unsettling. And even without clown makeup on, he is a scarier Joker than anyone. Even Heath Ledger has managed on screen before.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And Frank Gorsham was an amazing actor, too. He started off entirely in the doing impersonations, and he could do an impersonation of anybody. And his career is kind of faltering a little bit, but the guys doing Batman 66 love the old, you know, the old famous actors and convinced him to come on. And that kind of gave him a second breath of a career. But yeah. I'm so upset. One of his last movies was filmed here in Buffalo, New York. And so this is like, awesome. I'm going to go out where they're filming and meet him. And I never did. I decided it'd be a better idea to go to a bar and play poker that night. And then he died, like, I think, like a month later. And I just like, oh, yeah, just miss these opportunities, you know?
Yeah, yep.
But I love Frank Gorshin. And I love that Riddler. Jim Carrey's Riddler might be one of the worst things on film ever. That's not true. There's been a lot of bad films recently.
I wanted to like it. I really did want to like it. But as soon as I saw, you know, the neon lights on the machine guns, I didn't have hope for that movie.
Well, you know, I mean, Schumacher, if left to his own devices, might have made a fabulous disco Batman movie that kind of captured the spirit of 70s camp with 90s music videos and could have been really successful. But I think that he had so much pressure from Warner Brothers and all the eyes are on him,
right,
that he didn't get to go as crazy as he wanted. So you're left with this mix. It's not crazy enough to be fun, but it's not, it doesn't have enough feeling of depth to it to feel like a real story you care about.
Well, and I think it was taken out of his hands, too, because the second movie in there, from what I understand, they filmed that movie based on, okay, these are the toys that we're going to be selling, and let's film scenes with these toys, basically, in live action.
Right, which you can do well. I mean, Transformers and G.I. Joe are the prime example of writing for a toy set and being able to create a story that really resonates. Of course, obviously you had Jim Shooter and Larry Hama doing G.I. Joe. So with those two guys doing it, yeah, of course this is going to be good. And there's really, I mean, G.I. Joe was based on the idea of a S.H.I.E.L.D. Comic book against Hydra. That would have been great. But yeah, so I mean, you had a lot to work with G.I. Joe and Transformers, but still writing for the toys. And I think you could have made a Batman movie that played for toys, but it just wasn't good. Clooney was fine in the last one, but that was about it. It's bad. Wait, are we honestly having a debate? Are the Schumacher Batman films bad? Because that should be over with now, right? Like, we've all settled that debate. We decided the world is round. Water is wet. Sky is blue. Schumacher Batman films are terrible. Don't we all agree on that?
I think on our next podcast, we might do the top two Schumacher Batman movies. Top two.
Oh, damn it. I was going to release a podcast that had the bottom two Schumacher movies in it. So that might be competing.
Yeah. You know, I can go back and I see them on television now and it's like entertaining, but it's not.
Yeah. I still haven't found a perfect Batman film. 88 Batman has moments. Obviously, with Heath Ledger, that has a lot of great moments, but it's still every Batman has been missing something.
I agree.
And I hope the new one's great. I hope it is going a different direction, take on different ways of viewing Batman, because you can view Batman in a million different ways. Let's see him. I love the notion.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. No, there hasn't been a perfect Batman for me, but you know, my source material being the comics, I'm always like, my perfect movie would be the comics on film, but we haven't really seen that. And I don't even know if you can do that properly.
Well, yeah, here are the limitations. Most costumes look terrible. I don't know how Marvel manages it. I mean, those costumers are amazing to make that silly outfit look good, with scenery. You know, when all of a sudden you put it in the real world and it's very apparent that that's very silly that you're dressed in a bat costume. Batman's easy. You got shadows, but it makes it really hard. Moon Knight. How do you do Moon Knight correctly unless you put him in a white suit as opposed to, you know, the typical Moon Knight costume? It's
yeah,
tough.
And the white is, it's just like the Punisher, for instance. You know, if they had the comic book original costume where he has the white gloves and the white boots, that doesn't make any sense at all in the real world. Right. So,
although then you go too far of refusing to have a skull in it, like the Dolph Lundgren Punisher. It's like, come on, how hard would it have been to put in a T-shirt with a skull on it?
Right.
I mean, you're Dolph Lundgren. You love taking off your shirt anyways. God damn it, man. Put on a shirt with a skull.
So you're the other guy that watched that movie.
Oh, I was so disappointed because I loved Punisher and I loved Mac Bolan, the Executioner. I'm a big fan of bad pulp novels, and some of the worst pulp novels are the Executioner series, and therefore I love them. And so I kind of, you know, I love this idea. This is so easy to do because we all understand the motivation. Your family's killed. Now you're going to shoot people. You don't need any more motivation. This is not a hard kind of film to make.
No.
So, yeah, sad. But there hasn't been Punisher Warzone was really good, but nobody saw it. I forgot who was it? Who's the woman who directed that one?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but
boy, she's a good director.
I did like
she that really one. Is. Yeah. But yeah, no one's really managed the character right. The TV show was pretty close at times.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I'm becoming a grumpy old man. You know what it was? I was in a good mood when we initially wanted to record this last week because I hadn't actually read any comics lately. I actually finished up the City of Bane storyline in Batman comics in preparation for this pod.
Yeah.
And reading all the comics that I had been in my pull bin that I never bothered picking up, I wound up being angry and bitter by the end of the day. So this is not the best me. This is the angry and bitter me.
Okay. So you enjoyed the City of Bane? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, you know, I quit when Batman left the KG Beast dead and this, you know, paralyzed in the snow. Mm-hmm. I sort of checked out after that one. In fact, I think that's the last time I was on this podcast was talking about that comic. Maybe.
I believe so.
Yeah, but after that, I kind of stopped reading it, and it's like I hear, oh, Alfred's dead. Okay, yeah, okay. Nightwing is now calling himself Rick. Oh, okay, fine. Yeah, I don't know. But you know what? Comics don't need to be made for me. They made so many thousands of great comics for me in my lifetime of comics that you pick up with a beginning, middle, and end, like question number 26. Everyone go to Comicology and buy question number 26.
There you go. You heard it right here first, or maybe just, not first, but you heard it.
Just had to pitch. Had to pitch it. Yeah, but yeah, it's you know. So I mean, if comics aren't made for me, that's fine. If DC's going all digital, I'm probably not going to bother looking at them. I like to hold my comics. Mm-hmm. You know, DC decides that you know they don't want to publish different characters. Well, that's I feel bad people who are laid off, but. These are good ideas, and these great works have already been made, and a lot of them feel like they were made for me. And if the new stuff doesn't feel like it's made for me, that's okay. It's all right not to like something. It's all right for things not to be made for you.
And you know, the other thing is going back and reading stuff you never read, it's like, wow, I didn't even realize this was this good. So there's a lot of stuff that's already been done that's out there that is, I mean... Me, I don't know if I'll go to all the digital stuff or not, but there's a lot of back issues that I don't have that I'd love to read, and you know?
Oh, yeah. And I'm not knocking digital at all. No. I'm just saying that, yeah, DC does not seem to be in the direction that I care about, but, you know, neither is Marvel. But the medium of comic books is like jazz. It's going to change. It's going to times be uncomfortable. There's so many times in my life when modern jazz started turning me off. Like after Miles Davis, Birth of the Cool, jazz seemed less relevant. It seemed less interesting to me, but now I'm beginning to appreciate it a great deal more. Like things don't have to be made for us and things can change and things can still be interesting and vibrant. And jazz isn't as important to the American discussion as it used to be. And comic books will not be as important to the American discussion as they have been in the past, but they're still going to exist and there's still going to be great people doing great things with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thus speaks Nostradamus. I don't know, Bill. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've been behind a microphone. What do I normally do? I don't know. Yell at Barbara. I don't know what I normally do on a podcast.
It's been that long, or is your memory that short?
I think my memory is that short. It's actually, I think, about a year since we stopped recording the podcast when we came to the sudden realization of we have nothing more to say on this topic. Barbara learned to not hate comics. Okay. Done. So where do you go from there? That's why we're doing records, because there's so many great records that you can listen to and be shocked and amazed and find things you love in them.
Oh, I'm sure. So, yeah.
So anyways, Bill, I am kind of a little bit behind. I only catch the podcast, not the live streams. And for anyone who's watching the live stream, this is my revenge on you live stream watchers by you having to look at me. This is my punishment to you. So I'm a little bit behind. I understand someone really cool won the Stump the Listener contest. Is that correct? Is that information accurate, Bill? This incredibly yes. handsome and charming man won the contest, proving he's better than everyone else.
Yes, that was Sean.
Ah, darn it!
Sean won the contest.
All right. Well, who's the ugly jerk who also
Bob.
Won?
There was a Bob.
Oh, yeah. That would be me. All right. So, obviously, it's going to be me and Sean. We're going to need to have some sort of stuff.
Wasn't
off.
That my bribe for you to come on?
Well, bribe, victory. Look, whether I won or whether I was bribed by nefarious sources, it doesn't really matter. The important thing is that I'm here and I'm kind of wearing pants.
Well, that's good. Let's keep the camera right where it is. We don't need to go there.
In the meantime, I want to give a very special plug for Black Squirrel Maple Shine, the only alcohol made of 100% pure maple syrup, also made by formerly made by one charming, handsome employee. That'd be me. So as a special occasion, the last of my maple shine is for the Bat Pod.
There you go.
And you can't buy it in stores anymore, guys, so it's not really a commercial. Anyways. Ooh, good stuff.
So it's a classic.
It is a classic. It was a classic. People loved it. Unfortunately, you know, you need money to operate. So, but yeah, maple syrup makes for great booze.
That's interesting. It's like sweet.
Yeah, think about the process of distillation. It's nothing more than getting the ethanol out of any sort of liquid substance, right? Mm-hmm. You're basically pulling it out. You also make sure that you're not getting the, all the other chemicals in the process. But the more sugars, the better. The only problem with maple is that it's so active that if you pitch yeast into it, the yeast will have an orgy, reproduce, but have such reproduction that it will completely ruin your entire batch. So there are some tricks and techniques. It's not that easy, but it's a great sugar to work with. There's my plug for maple. So if you have land and you're thinking about buying a tree, might I recommend maple trees? Maple trees, the fun tree for the whole family.
Wow.
Right, this Redoing Podcast is also commercials, right?
We don't have a commercial. I guess that would be your first one.
Oh, well, first is maple shine, and now it's just maple trees. I won't bring up my sponsor, Oxygen. I recommend it, but
he's here.
I don't want to exploit your platform here, Bill.
No, it's all good. This is all going to be edited out.
Well, that's a good thing.
Because I'm the host and nobody wants to hear the other guy.
See, that was my normal technique for Galbox and Comic Shop. I figured I would just yak all the time, but no, it turns out if you have other people in the microphone, they start talking too. And what could come out of that?
You never know. You never know. So I guess we will go ahead and wrap it up here.
Before we go, Bill.
Yep.
I want your listeners to think about something. I want you to think about, let's say there was a new Batman movie being cast, and you had to cast a comic book podcaster for the role of Batman. Somebody in comic book podcasting do Batman. You can think maybe Jerry from the Professor Frenzy show, maybe he could do it, you know. Chris would be great from Chris and Reggie, and God, poor dear departed Reggie would have been the best Batman. But let's say you had to really get to the lowest tier podcasters to find your Batman voice. Bill, I think we know exactly what your Batman voice is, and I have brought evidence to prove it. Now, before we go any further, I know this is a long lead up to a long lead up, but just bear with me. So if you're familiar with Jan and Dean, Bill, you know Jan and Dean, right? The second most successful surf rock band of the 50s and 60s, right? So you had the Beach Boys,
right?
And you had Jan and Dean. It was like the Stones and the Beatles. And around 65, surf music is starting to get really boring. I mean, it's always been boring the way Jan and Dean and the Beach Boys do it, but it's getting boring. And they decide concept album. Brian Wilson is a madman. He's a genius. He's going to make the best album ever. He's going to make this album called Pet Sounds, and it will turn out to be one of the best albums ever. So Jan and Dean, realizing, you know, we need a concept album. How about the first opera in surf rock? And they decide we're going to do better than that. They hear about this new TV show that's about ready to launch, and they go to Fox and they go, hey, we understand that you're making a TV show out of Batman. We want to make a Batman album. Bill, I want you to play clip one to get an idea of what Jan and Dean sound like on their album, Jan and Dean Meet Batman, recorded in 1966.
known as Bruce Wayne by day, wealthy socialite. But incognito in dress, he finds crime by night. Yeah, it's Batman and Robin, the boy wonder at his side. Hey now, Riddler, Penguin, Joker, better go and hide. We need the Batman. We need the Batman.
All right. So, as you can hear, it may not be the greatest song ever made, but here's what's interesting about that song, is that, if you notice, it has a little bit of that famous Batman 66 theme.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. This was written before the TV show hit the air.
Interesting.
Yes. So, who was cribbing from who? Are Jan and Dean lying? We don't know, but it's interesting that a little bit of the Batman theme you can actually hear in that song. Now, Jan and Dean had a little bit of an issue. Which turns out they only had the legal rights to make one Batman song on the album. And all the skits they recorded these long skits because this was going to be an opera. Remember, they're going to defeat the Riddler and the Joker. All the big Batman foes they're going to defeat. And they're going to have little skits in between of Jan and Dean as Batman and Robin fighting the bad guys. Warner Brothers, well, at the time it was just National Periodicals, said to them, you don't have the legal rights to do these Batman skits. And so they had to burn all the tapes that they made of the recording session and instead come up with this really stupid Captain Jan and Dean the Boy Wonder skit, which was terrible, where they're superheroes who get their powers from a little old lady in Pasadena. So these recordings are lost. However, they weren't. Somebody saved them from a dumpster, hid them for years, and leaked them on YouTube. And we can finally hear what the skits are. And this is where it brings back to this point of if you had a podcaster who was going to play Batman, who was a bottom tier podcaster, play Batman, who should it be? Play clip two until I tell you to stop. This is the idea of the skits.
Most dreaded of all the underworld's foes is the Batman. His scientific genius and his limitless knowledge of the crimester's tricks have made him the terror of the criminal. What happens when he meets the most elusive trickster of them all? The Riddler. Quiet,
okay, stop. All right, so they're about ready to go to Gotham City, where Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson are about ready to read the Sunday paper. Why don't we play the rest of the clip here?
Quiet pervades Gotham City on an early Sunday morning as wealthy socialite Bruce Wayne and his young ward Dick Grayson are relaxing at the Wayne Estate.
Gee, Bruce, why can't I have the funnies? You always get the funnies first.
It's important for you, Dick, to first acquaint yourself with the world situation.
Uh-huh.
Then you should read the funnies afterwards for your entertainment.
Holy peace treaty. You're right, Bruce.
Now stop that. Doesn't that Batman sound exactly like Bill if Bill was recording those lines?
I don't think so.
I think that is exactly the way you sound. I think you're truly Jan from Jan and Dean.
It's possible. It is right, possible. Well,
I tell you that,
you never know. Well,
I was listening to this and I was thinking, I got to contact Bill to let him know that he sounds exactly like Jan on the unreleased copies of the Jan and Dean Batman skit from 1965. And that was the exact same day where you contacted me about the Batpod. It's synchronicity. It is scary how much you sound like that, Bill. That is exactly what you sound like, how Batman sounded. Now, fortunately, you don't sound like Robin. You don't sound like, gee, Bruce. No, but that sounds a lot like you. I think you would be cast as, you are now officially the podcast Batman.
The podcast in the new Batman.
Movie. The podcast Batman. You beat out a lot of great podcasters out there.
Well, you said it was lower tier, so there's probably a lot of.
Well, you know, when I say great podcasters, you know, we're talking comic book podcasts. All right, most of them are so much better than I ever could do, but, you know, it's still, we're none of us are cereal, Bill. None of us are cereal.
Sure. I would look pretty good on a cereal box.
Yeah, well, you know, although if Barbara ever kills me one day, maybe Sarah Koenig could do a serial podcast about my murder. Finally, I can do a good podcast. I just need to be the victim.
There you go.
So you got to think ahead, man. You know, I believe you light a candle rather than curse the darkness.
So Batman might have to lose a couple pounds, you know.
Well, they're casting podcasters, right? Like, I mean, it's not so like it's any of us are exactly putting on these tights, right?
Right.
And, you know, Adam West still looked pretty good, even when he was chubby wearing the Batman outfit. That Batman 66 outfit is built for us, Tubbos.
Yes, it is. So, yeah. Okay, well, I really appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, Bill, I absolutely love being here. I will come on anytime to talk about Batman, or in this case, actually talk about not a Batman comic. In fact, if you want to talk about not Batman comics, have you heard about this guy called Superman? Man, dig it. Dude has this cape, and he flies around. It's great stuff. I'm just saying. Oh, there we go. There we go. That's his true identity, not his former surf rock star. But no, Bill is secretly Superman. Well, once again, that costume, not really built for middle-aged guys like us.
No, probably not. No, probably not. Definitely not. So.
All right, and if anyone is interested in records, I'm going to do the shameless plugging myself here. I started writing about a record a day on Twitter, but I will be launching very, very soon with Barbara. She is returning to podcasting. We're going to do a Gal Walks in a Record Store, where we look at one album that you might know, like Led Zeppelin or Meatloaf, Bat Out of Hell, and then look at some weird albums that odds are you've never heard of before. One album that's currently on my turntable as we speak is an album, it's called Stripping. I love the line, Stripping, fun for the whole family, and there is a dancer on the cover of it. It may be the most brilliant album cover I ever saw, because what family doesn't love to strip together?
You heard that right here.
See, Bill, this is why you have me on, okay? Look, some people can just talk about comic book characters. So yeah. Who else is really talking about stripping in front of their family?
That would be only you.
Well, there we go.
So far.
Glad to be back, Bill. Glad to be back.
Yep. Well, we really appreciate you having you on here. And everybody go check that out. The Gal Walks Into, I almost said comic shop, Gal Walks Into a Record Store. And will there be singing on this podcast?
Almost inevitably. And because we're going to be covering albums that I love, and I very rarely do any of these things sober, yeah, there might be a danger that I might actually break out and sing when Tom Waits or Johnny Cash is playing. But hopefully not. Hopefully we're not going to, when we do Meatloaf, hopefully we're not going to be singing together the Paradise from the Dashboard Lights, all, what is it, 11 minutes of it?
Okay.
I'll try and avoid it. I'll try and spare everybody.
There we go. So we'll go ahead and head out of here. If you'd like to leave feedback for the Batpod, our email is batpodpodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are @bat_pod. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/thebatpod. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please consider giving us a review. We'd really appreciate it. A big thank you to everybody that has retweeted our show on Twitter and Facebook.
And if you're interested, you can find me at Nick City Brewing. That's N-I-C-K. CITYBREWING. I've never actually said that out loud. Nick City Brewing.
There you go. So, any last words?
Like, Lederhosen.
Until next time, same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.